This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, August 22nd. I'm Jeff Mossert. Coming up, we'll look at one community that has adopted a fish as its symbol, costing taxpayers quite a bit. And we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. An all-night negotiating session at Mahomet Seymour Schools has produced a tentative contract agreement. Talks between union negotiators and the school board went on for 12 hours, concluding around 5:30 this morning. Mahomet Seymour's Education Association, which includes 250 teachers and support staff, will have a look at the tentative agreement at 2 this afternoon, but it's not known when the school board could meet to ratify that contract. Illinois Education Association spokesman John Wedge says negotiators were very united in the way they felt about the tentative deal. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan says he and his family are staying strong as they weather the current roller coaster ride of court rulings. In an interview with the Chicago Sun-Times yesterday, Ryan says he has a lot of faith in his attorneys. Ryan's battle to stay out of prison remains alive while his lawyers push for a fresh hearing in his racketeering and fraud conviction. The 73-year-old former governor got bad news yesterday as a three-judge appeals panel upheld his conviction that left him under a court order requiring him to report to prison within 72 hours. But late in the day, the appeals court stayed the deadline. It ruled Ryan can remain free on bond while his attorneys try to get him a hearing before all 11 judges of the U.S. 7th Circuit Court of Appeals. The master plan for a multi-million dollar investment in Champaign's fire stations is getting another workover. In last night's study session, the city council suggested several changes to a study which recommends relocating fire stations on West Bradley and West John Streets and building a new station in the northwest area of the city. Champaign's fire chief, David Pennycook, says these changes are necessary because the city is growing.
The current fire station locations will not allow us to meet the 4.5-minute response time goal as the city continues to grow. We're achieving it right now, but as this growth continues, we're not going to be able to do it. And I always say, I had an old firefighter tell me when I first joined the fire service, there were three causes of fire: men, women, and children. And so when that population increases, the instance of alarms is going to increase too. And we've seen an 18% growth in alarm activity since the year 2000.
Pennycook says the city's area grew about 26% in the last 7 years. He says in the near future, a seventh fire station may be required to service the city more quickly. Pennycook says the cost of relocating and building a new fire stations would exceed $10 million. The city council will continue to discuss the fire station master plan in an upcoming study session. Champaign City Council is backing the master plan for developing the area around the I-57 Curtis Road interchange. The detailed plan calls for a mixed use of commercial, office, and residential spaces on about 640 acres. Planners hope to develop the I-57 area, which consists mostly of farmland, over a 15 to 20-year period. Yet the $13 million I-57 interchange is expected to be completed by the end of the year. Nancy Hetker, who lives in Cherry Hills close to the Curtis Road area, says she's impressed with the plan, but still has concerns about how council members may proceed.
It sounds like most of your hearts are in the right place. I do worry that 2, 3, 4 councils down the road, if they get into a tight financial place, they'll say, oh, what a great place to get some more development and get some tax money, and I'd like to make sure the framework's set in place that they can't do that very easily.
Councilmember Tom Bruno says the city will try to accommodate the interests of all parties involved. He says the master plan includes specific standards developers must meet, like a bicycle pedestrian system and more. A new Illinois law will require driver education courses to include lessons on distracted driving. Governor Blagojevich yesterday signed the bill known as Matt's Law, aimed at the use of cell phones and other devices while behind the wheel. Democratic Senator Mike Frerich sponsored legislation that was prompted by the death of Matthew Wilhelm. The Urbana man was struck and killed by a motorist while riding his bike last September. Authorities say the driver of the car was downloading a ringtone. Frerich says lawmakers hope to add more teeth to the measure this fall.
I think we've seen nationwide an increase in traffic accidents occurring because drivers have been focusing too much on non-driving related tasks, such as using a cell phone or other devices. What we hope to do is encourage schools to warn students about the danger of distracted driving in their curriculum, but then also when students disregard that instruction, there ought to be some penalties for that.
Frerich says colleagues rejected a provision in the bill calling for an offense of negligent vehicular homicide. He says some felt that part of the measure was too broad and needed more specific language. The governor yesterday also signed a measure that raises the age at which a teen can be on their cell phone while driving from 18 to 19, except in emergencies. Another new law revokes driver's licenses from people under 21 who commit gang-related offenses that involve vehicles or licenses. For the latest newscast online, go to wyol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Most cities have their symbols. Imagine San Francisco without the Golden Gate, New York without the Statue of Liberty, or Miami without dolphins. Linda Steffen has the story of a community that has linked itself with a fish that is not native to its waters. And stocking that fish is costing taxpayers a lot.
The brown trout arrived in Lake Huron's Thunder Bay by a fluke. Back in the 1970s, about 1,000 fish, surplus stocks from inland waters, were simply tossed out into the bay by biologists, as if the bay were a trash bin. No one expected them to survive. They thought they'd just be food for other fish. But the brown trout did survive. They grew quickly, large and feisty. The state started to stock these waters with young brown trout every year because anglers liked catching them. In fact, it was so popular, they named a fishing tournament after it, the Brown Trout Festival in Alpena, Michigan. This year, a crowd of hundreds gathered, despite periodic rain showers, as festival officials weighed in a day's catch. Lake trout. Walleye.
Steelhead. 8.85. Yeah. Definitely the biggest one of the day. It's the biggest of the tournament. How do you see this girl? Come on, you can do better than that. Salmon.
You don't need a brown trout to win at the Brown Trout Festival. And it's a good thing, because these days, most boats don't catch even one. That's because things have changed. The ecosystems of Lake Huron and the other Great Lakes are changing rapidly as foreign invasive species such as the zebra and quagga mussels steal away food at the bottom of the lake's food web. Plus, a migratory bird that's been showing up in this bay in huge numbers, cormorants, have been eating the small browns stocked by state fish nurseries before the fish ever make it out into open waters. For the past decade, the brown hasn't survived all that well in Lake Huron. So today, biologists estimate that taking into account all those fish that don't survive, every time an angler catches a big brownie, it now costs taxpayers close to $300. In other words, each brown trout caught represents about $300 spent by the state stocking program. Even though the brown trout is not native, people here say the fish belongs in these waters. Hobbyist Dick Cotterett at the Brown Trout Festival says the brown has a special allure for the angler.
Well, because they're the best eating and they're the hardest to catch. That's why we call it a brown trout, because anybody can catch a steelhead, or a lake trout, but they can't everybody catch a brown.
As the large fish becomes more and more elusive, it takes on the allure of a trophy fish. Fisheries biologist Dave Fielder says because of the high costs, for years now, the state has had good reason to quit stocking these waters with brown trout. But they still haven't. No one is willing to see the namesake of the Brown Trout Festival disappear.
What's always amazed me is how the natural resources in Michigan, and including the fisheries that we enjoy in the Great Lakes, is really a part of that local heritage and quality of life for these local communities. And it becomes an important part of the local existence and identity. And it's important that I think we as scientists don't lose sight of that.
But some say the fact that the local community has gotten used to seeing the brown trout does not mean it belongs in the lake. Mark Ebener is a fisheries biologist for the Chippewa-Ottawa Resource Authority. It regulates fishing for 5 Native American tribes.
You tell a lie long enough, and sooner or later people believe it and accept it as the truth. You know, it's not that brown trout belong here. Brown trout were introduced, and they may continue to be defined as an introduced species into North America.
Ebener says since the brown trout does no harm to native fish, such as the lake trout, his organization doesn't oppose the stocking program. But he also says, at the current cost, the brown trout is a clear waste of taxpayer money. Back in Alpena, biologist Dave Fielder agrees. The state can't keep stocking the lake with browns if so few continue to survive. But an angler himself, he looks with envy on a mounted brown that took last year's top prize in the tournament. An unbelievable 28.2 pounds.
Can you imagine that landing that fish? That must have been something. Anybody who's caught fish can look at that and imagine the battle they must have went through and the excitement they must have felt. And those are real feelings, and it's not to be trivialized.
That's evidence to Fielder and others who fish these waters, that at least some brown trout have what it takes to compete for food in the changing ecosystems of Lake Huron. For the Environment Report, I'm Linda Steffen.
And the forecast for the region today, partly to mostly sunny skies, hot and humid, a high of 93 degrees with the afternoon heat index around 100. Partly cloudy, muggy tonight, the low 71. Mostly sunny, hot and humid tomorrow, the high around 93 degrees. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, the low 72. Hazy on Friday, sunshine, hot and humid with a high of 92 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Wednesday, August 22nd, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.